We spoke to Andrew Dillon about this a few weeks ago when it was still a draft plan, but the AFL has sort of settled with the Players Association's new drug testing policy. They're going to do hair testing. It will include the AFLW as well as the AFL. But weirdly, everything is still shrouded in secrecy. So let's say a player tests two or three times for drugs. So they're going through a program, but they're not getting off the drugs. The football manager can know. I believe the club president can know. The club doctor can know. But for some reason, the coach of the club cannot. Our next guest is a principal lawyer at boutique law firm Sports Lawyer, Paul Horvath. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
I've interviewed Andrew Dillon and prior to that, Gillon McLachlan about drugs a number of times. And on one hand, they say it's a medical issue. But on the other hand, you know, obviously with footy, every other medical issue that a player might face, we know all about it, whether it's an ACL or a bout of the flu or a crook shoulder or whatever. You know, but we know what it is. We know how long it takes to fix. We know how the player's going. Why do they treat drug use so differently?
I think particularly bear in mind that this is an illicit drugs policy as contrasted with the banned or performance-enhancing drugs policy. They're two completely separate things, and I think it's important to note that this is a voluntary policy that the players and AFL have come up with as a best practice model in sport in, they say, Australia and no doubt internationally. To help players who may fall into the wrong path in society to deal with this matter. So they say they're being proactive. And I think that the general privacy laws require a degree of confidentiality around this sort of information. And it's obviously under this new policy deals a little bit differently where something's publicly known. There's a public photo of someone who is photographed, and I think there's a 2 to 4 week ban that applies to those sorts of circumstances. So there's a number of careful nuances, and what they say is that they take best medical advice from national and international experts.
Well, okay, but why tell the general manager of football and the club doctor, but not tell the coach? I mean, the coach needs to know, righto, here are the fit players that I can pick from to put my best team on the park this weekend. And then the club doctor says, oh, so-and-so over there, he can't play. Why not? I can't tell you. Well, I mean, that doesn't seem very satisfactory, does it?
Well, as you can see from the policy, there's strict confidentiality reasons. It's a question of how far and wide do you notify people about something having happened in the first strike, so to speak, when we're not using that language anymore, the first incident, only the doctor knows and assists the player to get some sort of rehabilitation. And then at the second stage, there's a plan that's managed through the AFL and the athlete, the player has to engage in that process. So the idea is the least number of people that know about it are advised, and why do they need to know about it? And the only reason that, for example, the CEO and president become aware is because the player hasn't engaged in the drug rehabilitation process or has relapsed in use, etc. Should the coach know, greater minds than me will explain that. But I think the general principle of privacy and confidentiality applies. And the coach mainly needs to know whether a player is available or not. We know that there are other common issues such as mental health issues that could lead to an athlete being unavailable.
Well, I take your point, but I just don't see why the president and the CEO and the club doctor know, but the coach does not. Paul Horvath there from Sports Lawyers.